Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and it seems today that all you see is violence in movies and chicken sex on TV. And with me, I have...
DLSS5 on? It's all of you in the mirror, and it's... Woof.
And...
I hope you're after. I can, and I can make a speech and won't be cut off. And
so, racism? It feels like racism.
Probably.
Yeah, I did not watch the Oscars, but I'm assuming there was some fuckery, as there usually tends to be, even when there's good things happening.
Yeah, the show was a bit of a mess in terms of the production. At least Conan O'Brien was funny, as he always is, because he is funny at everything.
Yeah,
that's good to know.
He's like, don't put me in this shit.
God, yeah, it's always something with this awards show. Not to mention, you know, obviously congratulations on Michael B. Jordan, but shouldn't they have given him two statues? He played twins, for God's sakes. Yeah, part of me thinks maybe I should have watched that, but it was a bit too absorbed in other things. But this isn't an Oscars podcast. That would be a really
Well, sometimes it is.
Yes, when it's relevant to our interests, then it sort of is. But this is technically good old Decibel Boost. And this is, in fact, episode 427, that is. So, how's everyone's week been going?
Oh, God, where do I begin? So, you ever have one of those days where you're coming home dead tired at 5 o'clock in the afternoon? And then you do it for 4 days in a row?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was me for the last 4 days. It has been... I'll just say rough. Got dangerously close to passing out today. Because, my God, walking almost 9 miles on the job is... probably not the healthiest lifestyle to have, especially since I usually walk minimum of 7 every day, which is also not what people recommend. The recommendation is like maybe, what is it, 2,000, 3,000 steps? I do 15.
Damn.
On an average day.
It's a lot of steps.
So, I am just running on fumes and caffeine, which is probably why I've been so... sounding so rocky and tired lately. It's been rough. It's been a rough couple of days. I'm very tired. I'm very groggy. But to quote one Scott Steiner, I'm a genetic freak and I'm not normal. Mainly because I have a rather substantially strong tolerance to caffeine. It keeps me up, but it doesn't really get me jittery unless it's like super early in the morning. I'm an energy drink guy. I'll pay for it later in life, but you know, whatever. Those ghost energy drinks, not bad. I like the cran grape flavor the most. So yeah, that's all I've got to say. And Samoa Joe, the numbers don't lie. They spell disaster for you at sacrifice.
I remember
that's
that
all
clip.
I have to say.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder about the caffeine thing. Maybe I should have taken a bit more before I got onto this, because like sometimes I'm a little bit conscious about like most of my caffeine comes from soda and energy drinks, so I worry about like maybe not the best for the figure. So I've been trying to like wean off it a bit. For the most part, I found like these very low calorie like drink mixes at like it's like Walmart store brand that have like a lot of caffeine in them per bottle of water, and I'm like, if it works, it works. Yeah. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Well, we will have 2 weeks of me bitching and moaning, and well, and being down. I can finally say, "Hey, my car is fixed."
Hey!
Yay. Hey!
Yeah. Yeah, that's all good and all, which, yeah, good for that. Good thing is fixed because this week was long as hell. I think I have to work like, let me see, 1, 2, 3, about 10 days.
Damn.
Granted, I know it's, well, I do mostly the morning stuff, but some of the time, sometimes I got later than usual. Well, not as late, but it's like, I'm tired, I want to go home type of thing. Well, it's like, yeah, it's been a sort of week where it's like, okay, I do this, I do that, then I go the fuck home. But at least the bad part's over. And I guess I'll add my little Oscars thing on this. So it's a full awards. Hey, good for them. All right. And wow, some love for Frankenstein, I see. And hey, I'm glad it's or any magic for weapons. Oh, that won something too. That's nice. One point after another, winning everything. That's, well, not everything, but it's like, I saw it coming, but yeah. K-Pop Demon Hunters winning their awards, which, yeah, that's a given. And, well, we know Mark Supreme got shut out, like, completely shut out. Maybe you shouldn't have said shit about ballet. Timothy.
Methinks Darren Aronofsky may or may not have had something to do with spreading the word out because, you know, Black Swan.
Ew.
For legal reasons, that is a joke. I'm not saying anything specific, I'm just making a joke.
Yeah. And the Oscars, I guess that's what Oscars. At least it didn't last. At least it didn't go too long. It's like when it ended. Like it go maybe a little bit over time, but it's like, yeah, wrap it up. We gotta go. And for once, the Hulu feed.
My recording of it. I'll go ahead.
And for once, the Hulu feed didn't cut off for once because they did that shit last year. I guess they figure out that I guess they figured it out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, my recording of that went on until like 10:46, so it did run long. That's expected. Although I will say, for a show that actually didn't run super long, that would be the Screen Actor Guild Awards, whatever they're calling it now. It was on Netflix a couple weeks ago. That was a clean 2.5 hours.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they had that on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just remember that thing you showing that, oh, that's right, in a couple of years the Oscars will be on YouTube, which, oh,
yeah,
oh,
wow.
God, this is gonna go well. Somebody has some fucking comment and shit, like, it's gonna have a bunch of rude-ass comments and
No. They're not going to have a live chat on for that. They would be absolutely out of their minds once that happened. Also, let Conan O'Brien host the Oscars for as long as he wants to. He is the only redeeming factor of your entire production.
I might have to see if there's an archive of the broadcast somewhere. I assume Hulu still got it, right?
I believe so. They should.
I don't know, maybe there's a bootleg floating around or something, but that's neither here nor there. As for me, well, I did not sit through the Oscars. Like I said, I was kind of here, there, and everywhere with other things, just trying to decompress after the week, because my job is getting a bit more on my nerves more than usual. So, you know, just play some video games here, Watch some TV there. You know, I was not prepared to hear a brutal death metal needle drop in fucking Beastars of all shows. But I'm impressed. I actually need to watch the last couple episodes of that season. But, yeah, not really anything much else to add. Well, aside from the fact that I technically beat Pokemon Legends Z-A, there's still the post-game, but I did get past, you know, I saw a credit scroll. That's what matters. Also, the fact that that climax is probably the single most studio-trigger-ass thing I've seen in a Pokemon game. I mean that complimentary, of course. But yeah, that's about it on my end. So, as always, let's dive into the usual weekly business, starting, of course, with the new song discussions for the past week. As always, there'll be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with us, mark your calendars for new albums, put some new tunes in your playlist, all that fun stuff. So, let's start right here at the top. We have single number two here from the electronic act Lip Critic, their upcoming second album, Theft World, coming out May 1st. You might remember the last time we brought up the album and talked about its actual announcement. Apparently, a description said that, like, the lyrics for all this was dictated to them by some weird thieving stalker asshole decked down in FNAF merch belting out hallucinatory ramblings. I don't know. Is that true? Who really knows? But, yes, second single here is called Jackpot. And it's definitely a bit more explosive and full force than the previous track. The tempo, while still having this very steady groove to it, that kind of alternates between halftime in the first minute or so, and then, you know, more double timing in the back half. You hear, like, the rumble of the synthetic kick. It's very pronounced. Eventually swelling into this crescendo of glitched out casino jackpot sounds and explosion sound effects. You know, it makes sense, because the entire music video was literally just, like, this vertical iPhone view of them in a casino fucking around and winning and losing money. Because you know how it is with casinos. The house always wins. And, of course, as the hectic glitchiness builds up, there eventually is, like, this weird pocket of relative serenity, like an actual melodious bridge. But make no mistake, the production here is still very maximalist and very cacophonous, while actually kind of capturing something sort of depressing about the nature of constantly gambling, as the lyrics very much rely on the constant refrain of, "Do you still crave the feeling?" That is a sentiment that probably hits a bit close if you spend all your time gambling to win, or just to feel something.
It feels like they took some inspiration from the movie, not the band, the movie, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. You know, Terry Gilliam, him. He's the one from Mighty Python that did that movie for that video. However, this is weird, even for me, and I gotta say I'm not a fan of this kind of hyper-edited video style either, even if it's trying for an ironic aesthetic. Though it does go on a lot of stream building in Las Vegas, so, you know, fair play to that.
I should go watch that movie. I got a bunch of movies I gotta catch up on. But let's move on to the next track here, which is significantly more normal in every conceivable way. So, we have the latest single release from Thundercat's upcoming new album, Distracted, dated for April 3rd. And this one is a collaboration with Willow, who just had a new album out not too long ago. This track is called Thunder Wave, and that is not necessarily a Pokemon reference. I was going somewhere with that. Anyway, so the song structurally is pretty straightforward in that the main rhythm is like this very steady, you know, groove with this reverberating, very crystalline sounding set of synths and bass grooves, sounding like a very, like, it's basically like a really great soundtrack for like an ice or water level in a video game. And of course, the two are singing pretty much in unison with their own, like, differing takes on, like, very high-pitched registers and all. And it's just a vibe, man. It's just like, you know, it's nice. It's nice to hear music like this when you're not stressing out about water physics and trying to escape sharks or something.
Yeah, this did a good joint from Thundercat. And also, yeah, possible too. Like, I know she's been, you know, taking her music career steadily and, trying to make art. Which is a good props to, because, you know, like, this Because you don't think of Willis like, you know, she wants to be that very spacey art kid. And, well, yeah, it works. It works. And then you did feel the melodies, the harmonies, the bass, the bass, which plays all so well. It's like, oh, this sounds kind of nice. This is nice. Or maybe they can go Thundercat. Of course, it's going to be nice. But yeah, this shit sounds good.
Cool.
Yep, it's pretty lush sounding here. I do dig the more synth-laden backdrop of the arrangement here on this one. And those bass licks at the end are some moi chef's kiss, as the kids say.
Wee. Yeah, that takes care of that. So moving on to the next track. Mark, care to explain what's going on with this one?
All right, so I mean, okay, so we have a, I want to say double album, kind of. But it's for other people. That is Mike. Yeah, that Mike. Earl Sweatshirt and the team Surf Gang. They announced that double album. It's titled Pompeii Utility. Which is basically like, and from looking at the track, this is basically like, one side is Mike, the other side is Earl. Which is like, okay, so, it's sort of outcast, but not outcast. I don't know. Considering which is going on, you know, that's from Surf Gang. So anyway, the track we got out today is titled Minty/Earth. I guess that these are going for it. But anyway, okay, like the first half is basically Mike do this thing. And oh, by the way, Chuck opens with a Legend of Zelda soundbite as in, hey, listen!
Kill it with fire! I can't go back!
Yeah, we don't need to hear Navi ever again for any reason whatsoever.
Basically, Mike has my do this thing map on this very minimal beat. They do this like Lord of the Rings thing. It's very simple what Mike does. But it's not very good. But it wouldn't be just the Earth, like Earl's part. It is more quiet there. It is more smoother, and it does got these usual dense rhymes that I usually hear from Earl. But yeah, but like I was saying, okay, this is kind of all right. This is kind of interesting seeing these two do an album together. Although, looking at the track list, it's basically like, I want to say so, speak about Love Below, except not really, or maybe it is, except, you know, these two were never a duo. I mean, they rap together on some songs, but not like a duo, but you get what I'm saying?
Yep.
And also, oh yeah, I'm going to add this. Yes, there are three tracks on this thing. But I will make it a sentence because, like, well, at least it's something I like. I just try to divide apart or some shit, but yeah.
All right, that takes care of that. Now, moving on to the next track. Man, was the last Kacey Musgraves record really only like 2 years ago? I feel like it was longer than that. Oh, God, time flies when the world is burning into oblivion. But the important thing is that Kacey Musgraves announced her newest album for May 1st, titled Middle of Nowhere. And we have the lead-off single here, titled Dry Spell. And I'll admit straight up, this one hooked me immediately a lot more than the singles from her past couple of albums. The hooks here are a lot stronger. There's more of a rock-solid, you know, memorable chord progression, as well as a equally memorable intermixing set of acoustic melodies. And most importantly, the lyrics are a very relatable sentiment about how Kacey hasn't gotten laid in like a year. Seriously, the entire song is just like, Jesus Christ, it's been almost, it's been 335 days since I've got some dick. This sucks. And of course, he got an entire music video set in a supermarket with so much phallic sexual imagery, where every other scene is basically just Casey thinking, I should call him. So, yeah, pretty damn good song.
It's pretty, like, you know, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I kind of like it. That's all I got. Like, in the course, you have the music video. It's like, oh, yep. That's all I got. Sorry.
Oh. Well, at times like this, I'm reminded of a scene from an episode of Married with Children with Kelly talking to a recently divorced Marcy. Horny as a toad, huh? Bingo. Also, this is how you write euphemisms about sex, Taylor. Oh. I did not listen to that album. I merely read the lyrics and, no. Terrible.
I did listen to that album. Why did I choose Listen, I promised a friend I would listen to the Taylor Swift discography at some point, and it was during December, so technically speaking, it won't count against my Wrapped. Technically, no one can prove this. I could be lying for all you know.
Well, I'll let you have that sympathy. It is, of course, a knife. Who could possibly misinterpret that song?
Oh my god. Time is a flat circle, but let's not dwell on that, because we have one last song to discuss here, and boy howdy is it a big one. Alright, so let's talk about everyone's favorite heavy metal uncle, Devin Townsend. Heavy Devi, if you will. The power nerd himself. Man's been at it for a long time. He's done a lot of things. He's also been promising a lot of things. For example, one thing that he's been promising up and down for about a decade now is a big orchestral rock opera piece called The Moth, which, technically speaking, did come to fruition after when he actually scheduled a couple of live performances of an orchestral version in the Netherlands last year. Man, what I wouldn't have given to be there. Why has everything got to cost fucking money? But if you thought that it was going to be, you know, just those two shows and the concept would fade into the ether for all of eternity, lo and behold, friends, for he is scheduled the release of The Moth as an official studio album for May 29th. And so, to commemorate the occasion, we have the first single from the record, Enter the City. And, oh man, is it, this feels really special to me, because he's been doing some good stuff in recent years, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it's been, how do I put this, like, kind of in a comfortable groove. It hasn't been quite as over the top in the vein of my favorite Devin Townsend albums, which are Deconstruction and Ziltoid/Z2, but this, we might be getting that kind of Devi again. Because, you know, it might be a 3-minute song, but there's a lot going on. You know, there's a lot of very elaborate operatic vocals, even if the lyrics are very straightforward, like repeating the sentiment of awful lot depending on the weather. The instrumental has this very steady, like, chugging guitar groove reinforced by the drums. And, of course, the entire orchestral backing is intermixed throughout with plenty of glockenspiel, the epic strings, the, you know, blaring horn sections and all. It's all here, man. This is gonna be an event, isn't it? Like, May cannot get here soon enough, can it?
Ugh. Yeah, it's a bit hard to gauge a feeling for what this whole project is going to be after just one song, especially since it's only, like, barely 3 minutes. But the musical styles being far more theatrical and orchestral, akin to Deconstruction, Z2, even a little bit of Empath, it tells me that this is going to be a trip. Also, 24 tracks, huh? This is going to be a case of me making a rare exception to my 14-track album rule when this comes out, because at this point I'm in it for the long haul. I've listened to almost every single one of this band's albums. I just have to get to those early solo albums. You know, Teria and Accelerated Evolution and Synchestra. I don't know why I haven't gotten to those. I listen to literally every other album. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Sometimes there's not enough hours in the day. But, you know, if there's anyone that could make 24 tracks worth listening to on an album, it would be Heavy Devi.
And I hope and I pray that this means we are inching closer and closer to what we all really want. The musical about the penis.
Penis, penis, penis. If I say that any louder, I feel like my roommates are going to knock on the door like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
What?
To which I will say, you want that alphabetically or chronologically?
Yes.
Self-control goes a long way. Also, I'm very tired. I'm going to bed after this. Let's wrap this shit up.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to take just a little bit of a break, just, you know. And when we come back, we have a bit of news. I'm not particularly happy about it, so I need to cool my head off before we get really pissed. And we're back. So, we sort of would have talked about this last week, but it was breaking so close to our recording session that we decided to put it off in case that anything more major and important happened. So, let's talk about Live Nation. So, you might remember a couple years back, back in 2024, when Joe Biden was president, the Department of Justice, you know, under his presidency, filed an antitrust lawsuit against Live Nation and Ticketmaster, attempting to break up the monopoly that they had when they merged in 2010 and used to basically control so much of the goddamn music industry that it basically just, it fucking sucks, okay? I hate this company. But because we live in the unholy post-2024 years where nothing good can ever seem to happen ever, the current Department of Justice, operating under Trump and Pam Bondi, has decided that the lawsuit would be settled before any of this properly goes to trial. So, now that we have, like, the news of that, they were going to, you know, settle... How do I phrase this? So Live Nation technically doesn't have to face trial for the fucking monopoly bullshit, but apparently there's a bunch of terms that they allegedly have to agree to, you know, in order for to avoid any other fucking bullshit, allegedly. So, the terms have been shared with the public. Gonna try to sort of bullet point this as best we can. So, there's 13 main sections to this agreement. Point one requires them to develop an API or other measures for listing, verification, authentication, and delivery of tickets for use with any third-party primary marketplaces chosen by the venue, and it must not include roadblocks that would incentivize vendors to prioritize Live Nation venues. Point two, Ticketmaster must make its back-office system available as a standalone product and allows venues to use multiple back-end systems if they choose. They must limit exclusive agreements with venues for a maximum four-year term. They must not, you know, initiate renewal negotiations early, condition any terms on a venue's agreement to forego requests for proposals from other parties. Point three requires Live Nation to sell off 13 of their venues, while point four forbids the company from acquiring them. Said venues are Empower FCU in Syracuse, New York, the Main Savings Amphitheater in Bangor, Maine, the BMO Pavilion. Wait, BMO has a pavilion? Nice. in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, American Family Insurance Amphitheater, also Milwaukee, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts in Bethel, New York, Germania Insurance Amphitheater in Austin, Texas, Riverbend Music Center in Cincinnati, Ohio, Brandon Amphitheater in Brandon, what's MS again?
Mississippi.
Ah, Brandon, Mississippi, alright. Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion in Woodlands, Texas, Fort Idaho Center in Nampa, Idaho, Pine Knob Music Amphitheater in Clarkston, Mississippi. No, wait, Michigan? MI is...
Yeah, Michigan.
Ah, all right. The Walmart Amphitheater in Rogers, Arizona. Wait, AR is...
Arkansas.
Fuck me. Wharf, and finally, the Wharf Amphitheater in Orange Beach, Alabama. It's got to be Alabama, right? I'm sure AL is Alabama.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, cool.
Well, obviously, here, clearly, the hottest of hotbeds. I mean, who doesn't want to go pay extortionate amounts of money to see a concert in Brandon, Mississippi, or Bangor, Maine?
Trying to imply Maine is real. Nice try, Live Nation. We all know that's just a fever dream Stephen King made up. Maine. Anyway, getting back on topic. Point 5 requires Live Nation to allow artists to rent Live Nation venues, even if they aren't under contract with Live Nation. Point 6 prevents Live Nation from entering into a contract with a major concert venue that provides Live Nation with exclusive or preferred access to the venue. For point 7, Live Nation must terminate its ticketing services agreement with global venue development and management company Oakview Group, whose venues must be allowed to open up a new RFP in search of alternate partners. Point 8 prevents Live Nation from retaliating against the venue that chooses a ticketing platform other than Ticketmaster and from steering content to favor Ticketmaster clients. Point 9 ensures that artists have access to all information on the people who buy tickets to their shows and requires that artists be made aware of this option. Point 10, Live Nation and Ticketmaster must notify the U.S. government of any further acquisitions. Point 11 requires a monitor to remain in place to enforce the agreement for its duration. Point 12 sets the duration at 8 years. Finally, point 13 sets a fee of $5 million per infraction whenever Live Nation or Ticketmaster violates the agreement, allowing plaintiffs to sue for more money in the event of repeated infractions and create a settlement fund of more than $280 million to settle claims and penalties brought forward by individual states. And I'm going to be honest, this just sounds like a bunch of word salad.
Okay, I have 3 points about this. Number one, this settlement is bullshit, plain and simple. Point two, have you seen the track record of this administration? They are so out of their element. Like, you could go up against these people for anything, and you would win. Just ask all those hand-picked judges that continue to lose and lose and lose and lose and lose, because my God, have we no qualifications for anything anymore? Oh, that's right, because intelligence is bad. And point three, obviously this isn't over. Obviously this is not going to just go away into that there good night, or however the saying goes, because I'm so fucking tired right now.
Yeah, like, see, that's the thing about reading all this, is that it seems like it's a lot, like, a lot of rules and stipulations, but very little of this seems to meaningfully address the problem of, you know, clients getting screwed over, and, you know, artists getting screwed over. In fact, in the words of Dipper Pines, wow, these are worthless! And boy howdy do I really want someone to stick it to these companies, because in the midst of all this, apparently there's been some additional court documents that were dug up in, you know, the antitrust case, as reported by Variety and Bloomberg, and of course the music blogs and all, that revealed a Slack exchange from a few years ago between Ben Baker and Jeff Weinhold, who are regional ticketing directors for Live Nation. And, of course, they were very, very gleeful about how much money they could squeeze out of fans through stuff like parking costs and lawn chair rentals. When Weinhold floated the idea of $250 for a VIP parking spot, Baker reacted, "These people are so stupid. I almost feel bad taking advantage of them." And Baker would later go on to brag about charging $50 to park in the grass and $60 for closer grass. Quote, "Robbing them blind, baby. That's how we do it." I hate this company. I hate this company. I hate this company so fucking goddamn much. Like, you hear this, right?
We never would have heard about this had one of the Department of Justice attorneys, you know, before the stupid people took over, presumably, said, no, you gotta show this because this is rather significant. Also, wow, you people suck. That's me paraphrasing. I'm sure the attorney didn't say that. Probably thought it, but didn't say it.
Oh, how I wish he would have said it. Because, like, you hear that, right? Like, this is fucking, like, bad anime villain shit right here. Or, like, a fucking Saturday morning cartoon. Like, high school bullies shaking down nerds for lunch money in a fucking episode of, I don't know, Doug or something. I hate it. I hate it so much. Can there be something that happens with this company? Can there be, like, some kind of, I don't know, last-minute plot twist that throws a wrench in the gears of the bullshit settling out of court or whatever? Can there not be something that prolongs this hearing?
What if I told you 27 states are going, all right, we'll do it ourselves?
Yeah, please, please, go on. I need to hear the music to my ears.
Well, citing this piece from the Hollywood Reporter and Ethan Millman, headline, Live Nation antitrust trial to resume Monday as company fails to reach settlement with states. Some states were okay for this, but apparently at least 27 others have gone on to say, no, including, not limited to, Colorado, New York, California, and Texas.
Damn.
The thing is, this is ongoing. It has just started. This could take a while. We're only at the first day as of recording. I can see in this, I have a billboard piece up here. My God, I just lost it. I have a billboard piece here, basically laying out the first day of back and forths. Can you tell I'm tired? All I can really say about this is that, yes, many states' attorney generals and members of the U.S. Senate are going after Live Nation to continue onward. They just won't have, you know, the feds working with them, which in this case is a good thing because, again, these people cannot even sue a sandwich and win.
I remember that.
Quoting the Billboard piece, 26 states and District of Columbia are proceeding full steam ahead with this trial in New York federal courts. Three states have signed on to the DOJ settlement: Arkansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Again, super hotbeds. Like, who doesn't want to go to a concert in bumfuck nowhere, Nebraska? While a handful of others are still negotiating with Live Nation, and he says that DoSell will be paid financial damages out of a $280 million fund created by Live Nation. Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. This could take weeks. There will be weekly recaps on Billboard every Friday going forward, so we'll have that to, you know, cite as this progresses.
Please. I just need one good thing to come of this, please. I'm sick of the bad guys winning, people. So, yeah.
Let's not forget, most of y'all made this happen, so that's on you. Why did I say this?
This is a mess of your own making.
And why I say this? Because you need to hear it.
The important thing is, let's hope those other 30 states take this company to the fucking cleaners.
It would be nice. It would be nice. But again, this is going to be developing in real time, so we're going to have to wait a bit for further details to come out. Please, for the love of God, destroy this fuck-ass company.
And while we wait for that to happen, that pretty much does it for the news. So until the next time we have to tune into this, We are going to move on to the one last bit of business before the sign-off, and that is the new album releases for the week of March 20th, 2026. Starting at the top, we have the newest album from Exodus with Goliath. We have the first new album from Poison the Well in well over a decade with Peace and Place. If you like Luke Combs, he's got a new project coming out, The Way I Am. We, of course, have the upcoming Mike Will Made It project Reset with a 3 in it. From Naomi Scott, you might remember her from Smile 2, we have her debut studio album Fig. And finally, from BTS, we have their newest album, Arirang. Now it's about time to clean house, get the hell out of here. You know where to find Alex in the description. Mark, what about you?
Oh, you can find me on Blue Sky Mental and Media, Instagram, all that stuff, and on my site, on the HyperOne.com. Where recently I started doing Time to Season early because, well, one show managed to come out. Come out this weekend. It's the big cock of the town. Big talk of the cock of the. Yeah, you get it. It's Spooks of Fire.
We're going to get 12 weeks of dick jokes out of that one.
Yes.
And as for me, you can find me on Blue Sky, etc. at Rob Barracuda. You can email me, robert@sururesolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Be sure to follow us on Blue Sky at sururesolution.bluesky.social. Visit the website, sururesolution.com, for written articles, the podcast, podcast O&A, all of that good stuff. And, of course, be sure to find the link to our Discord server there as well for all kinds of other discussions goings-on. And, yeah, thank you for listening this week. We'll, of course, be back next week with more of the usual weekly business. So, until then, protein espresso martini. None of these words exist in the Bible, Buffalo Wild Wings.
Ew. Oh, yeah. Also, fuck you, Slate.